the green light to the invasion of East Timor. But as the casualties mounted, as hundreds of thousands of Timorese were dying, the United States, which had a donor-client, as Henry Kissinger called it, relationship with East Timor, that was supplying 90% of Indonesia, 90% of Indonesia's military, gave additional assistance. And so these situations, Timor, East Pakistan, it's as if you're in an ammunition store and the guy is out there on a shooting spree and he comes back to get more ammunition and you give it to him. These things make Henry Kissinger, I believe, liable for war crimes.
Reid, we're going to continue this conversation after, and we're going to post it at democracynow.org. Reid Brody, human rights attorney, war crimes prosecutor. We'll link to your article, "Is Henry Kissinger a War Criminal?" That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO colorful, independent, and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year campaign, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us to reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st. Be a ray of light in your community by making your tax-deductible donation at kboo.fm/give today.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, much of Northwest Oregon is under a flood watch until Tuesday afternoon.
Female athletes file a federal discrimination lawsuit against the University of Oregon.
And in national news, embattled New York Congressman George Santos is expelled from the U.S. House.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 1st, 2023. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. As you may have noticed, it is wet outside and much of Western Oregon is under a flood watch until Tuesday afternoon. There's an atmospheric river headed to Northwest Oregon, including in the Portland metro area, the Coast Range, and the Willamette Valley. It's bringing rainfall that could mean flooding of rivers, creeks, streams, and other low-lying areas. Creeks and streams may rise out of their banks, and flooding could occur in urban areas with poor drainage. Residents are advised to stay up to date on the flood watch, and if there is a flood, to avoid the waters both on foot or if you're in your car. It only takes 6 inches of moving water to knock you off your feet, and 12 inches can float a car or small SUV.
A federal action lawsuit alleging discrimination against female athletes was filed against the University of Oregon by members of the beach volleyball team and rowing team today. The suit claims the university is, quote, depriving its female student athletes of equal treatment, equal financial aid, and equal opportunities to participate in varsity athletics in violation of Title IX, end quote. Title IX is the 1972 federal law that requires males and females be provided equal opportunity to participate in sports. The suit comes after a wide-ranging front-page investigation by the Oregonian, which reported ongoing disparate treatment of female athletes. The report revealed the fact that the beach volleyball team has received athletic scholarship funding and that the team is forced to practice and play home matches at a public park where there are no doors on restroom stalls. Travel and daily stipend allowances also lag well behind those given to male athletes. In addition, the suit takes on the new name, image and likeness compensation rules for student athletes, and alleges the school is depriving female athletes equal opportunities to develop and promote themselves. In a statement after the filing, university officials said in part, quote, UO Athletics is committed to providing a quality, positive experience for all our student athletes, end quote.
Embattled U.S. House Representative George Santos was expelled from Congress today. It's the first time in over two decades that the House has ousted a sitting member, voting 311 to 114 in favor of removing the Republican earlier today. Santos was expelled after a House ethics investigation concluded he exploited his position in the government for profit. After the report, Santos announced he would not seek re-election but refused to resign. In addition to the House ethics investigation, Santos faces 23 federal charges. These include allegations of fraud related to COVID-19 unemployment benefits, misusing campaign funds, and lying about his personal finances on House disclosure reports. The New York Republican has pleaded not guilty to all those charges. Santos has also been under fire during his short term for a series of lies regarding his family and work history that includes falsely claiming he was the grandson of Holocaust survivors. CNN reports that all four top House leaders voted to keep Santos in office. The House clerk now assumes control of Santos's office, and the governor of New York will schedule a special election so voters can choose a replacement.
Officers with the Portland Police Department are facing an internal affairs investigation after using suspect mugshots in a presentation to the Portland City Council. In a virtual work session Tuesday, Commander Robert Simon and Sergeant Jorge Mendoza featured the mugshots in case studies about retail theft at stores in Janssen Beach and Cascade Station Shopping Center. All the suspects shown were black, and their names and birth dates were visible. Oregon state law prohibits law enforcement from making mugshots public, except under certain circumstances. Those circumstances include when the mugshot is needed to apprehend a dangerous suspect or to prompt victims to come forward. Mugshots can also be made public once the subject is convicted of the crime they were charged with when the picture was taken. Three of the four people whose mugshots were shown have not been convicted of a crime. One of them had their charges dropped. Portland Police spokesperson Mike Benner told OPB that the slideshow was for internal purposes only and that, quote, the PPB regrets the unintentional error of not omitting the photos before the presentation to the City Council and ultimately the public, end quote.
Government assistance programs could help older Washingtonians, but many of these programs are underutilized. People across the state are facing economic pressures, and Eric Tegetoff spoke with the King County Assessor to learn more.
Older people across Washington are facing strains on their budgets. Government programs could assist them, but they're underused. An assistance program like the Senior Property Tax Exemption is a prime example. King County Assessor John Wilson says the median value for a home in his county is about $790,000. If someone qualifies for a full exemption, he says they would save almost $5,000 a year.
$5,000 a year saving in property taxes is nothing to be trifled with. But the shame is a lot of folks don't know that that program even exists.
Wilson adds that the state legislature has expanded the senior property tax exemption program by increasing the economic threshold. He says in 2024, his office estimates as many as 30,000 more people will apply for the program. Other programs can also help. The state's charity care law directs hospitals to provide financial assistance to low-income patients. The Affordable Connectivity Program helps people get a discount on their broadband internet service. And bigger federal programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program provide crucial assistance, but only about 64% of eligible older Washingtonians use it. Wilson says there's an unnecessary stigma surrounding assistance.
I know from talking to seniors, what you hear sometimes is, well, yeah, but I just feel kind of awkward asking for it. Or they feel like it is some kind of tacit admission that I've failed somehow.
Wilson says government at various levels needs to do a better job of raising awareness for these programs, too.
There are so many economic pressures that are weighing on people now, And there is a safety net out there, but we don't do always a really good job of showing people, here's how you can access it. And here, by the way, are the various things you're eligible for.
Online tools can also help people find the programs they're eligible for, such as benefitscheckup.org from the National Council on Aging. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Portland teacher strike is going to cost students half their winter holiday break. This past Tuesday, members of the Portland Association of Teachers voted to ratify a new tentative agreement with the Portland Public Schools, ending a three-week strike. Portland Public Schools then had to determine how to make up 11 school days that were canceled during the strike. After considering several options, PPS confirmed on Thursday they will make up 5 of those days by cutting the winter holiday break, from 2 weeks down to 1. Other single makeup days will fall at various times throughout the rest of the school year. This decision leaves many parents unhappy, as some had planned for a 2-week break, allowing for extended vacations and other plans. The last day of school for students in Portland before the winter break is now December 23rd.
If you vote in Washington State, you might be interested to know that your ballot is more likely to be rejected if you're Black, Asian, Latino, and especially if you're under 25. That's according to a new study from the University of Washington. Investigate West reports that in the 2022 general election, nearly 5% of voters aged 18 to 25 had their ballots rejected. Compare that to just 0.8% of voters 46 to 65 and 0.3% of voters over 66. The report also shows that in the 2020 election, Hispanic and Asian voters had ballots disqualified at nearly twice the rate of white voters. For Black voters in that same election, ballot rejections were about 50% higher than that of whites. The most common problem with rejected ballots? They're unsigned or have a non-matching signature. It's worth noting, however, that most rejected ballots are cured in time to have the votes count, which means the errors causing them to be disqualified are corrected.
After more than 20 years of advocating for their protection, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will list wolverines as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. There are about 300 wolverines left in the Northwest and Northern Rockies. Eric Tegetoff has the details.
Conservation groups are celebrating a long-fought battle to protect the dwindling population of wolverine in the Northwest and Northern Rockies. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced wolverine warrant being listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. There are about 300 left across the Northwest and Northern Rockies. Bethany Cotton says the effort to protect wolverine began more than 2 decades ago.
It's literally been 20 years of advocacy to ensure that these climate-sensitive species receive the protections they need and can get on the road to recovery.
Fish and Wildlife has seesawed on the question of protecting wolverine. Last year, arguing against listing, the state of Idaho said conservation efforts had restored the species to a stable population. The listing was published today and opens up a 60-day public comment period on the interim rule. Cotton says listing the species as threatened is a great first step, but adds that trapping is a major threat to wolverine that could be allowed to continue under this rule.
It also has language that allows some activities, and unfortunately, one of the things in that interim rule is allowing for take or harming or killing wolverine in trapping.
Cotton says the science has been clear that wolverine needs safeguards.
Now we need to make sure that those protections are meaningful, that they're followed by state and federal entities, that we get a recovery plan and critical habitat, and that we really do protect these really amazing animals.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A passing to report tonight, former Supreme Court Justice and the first female to ever sit on the U.S. Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor, has died. The Washington Post reports that O'Connor passed away today in Phoenix, Arizona, of complications from advanced dementia. She was 93. O'Connor was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Ronald Reagan in 1981 as a conservative, but while serving, she became known for her independence. During her 25-year term, she wrote or co-wrote many notable decisions, among them the principal opinion in the 1992 case Planned Parenthood of Southeast Pennsylvania versus Casey. That case set a new standard for judging abortion issues by reaffirming the Roe versus Wade decision of 1973. It also expanded the authority of states to regulate and restrict abortion care. O'Connor also wrote an opinion justifying affirmative action in law schools and largely supported the accepted boundaries between church and state. The justice was known to say that while she didn't mind being the first woman on the Supreme Court, she did not want to be the last. Today, out of 9 members, a record 4 women serve on the highest court in the U.S.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. At 7, it's Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with periods of rain and an overnight low of 44. Tomorrow's weather will also be cloudy with some light rain likely, highs in the upper 40s. Today in history, in 2006, same-sex marriage is legalized in South Africa, making it the first country and to this day the only country to legalize same-sex marriage on the African continent. The quote of the day is from German writer Christa Wolf, who died on this day in 2011. Wolf is considered to be one of the most important writers of the former East Germany. She said, "What is past is not dead. It is not even past. We cut ourselves off from it. We pretend it to be a stranger."
The truce between Israel and Hamas fell apart yesterday with fighting resuming. Also, Secretary of State Antony Blinken urges Israel to protect civilians amid Gaza truce talks. And the CDC director warns about respiratory illness as flu season begins. With more on those stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The way Israel defends itself matters. It's imperative that Israel act in accordance with international humanitarian law and the laws of war, even when confronting a terrorist group that respects neither.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken repeated calls for Israel to spare civilians in its war against Hamas. Another set of hostages and Palestinian prisoners were released Thursday under a deal extending a pause in the fighting. The Biden administration is pressing for a permanent peace deal that includes safety for Israelis and self-determination for Palestinians. Chaos erupted at Senate Judiciary Thursday after the committee issued subpoenas for billionaire conservative donor Harlan Crowe and conservative court activist Leonard Leo, both tied to Supreme Court ethics scandals. Tennessee GOP Senator Marsha Blackburn argued with Chairman Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois.
Mr. Chairman, don't we get the opportunity to speak?
We're in a roll call.
So you're telling us to shut up?
Even though multiple
members
have asked
to
speak? You
want us to shut up?
All the Republicans walked out of the committee's meeting, and some later said Crowe and Leo should ignore the subpoenas as invalid. Director of the CDC, Dr. Mandy Cohen, stressed the importance of vaccinations in testimony about the coming flu, RSV, and COVID season.
COVID is still the respiratory virus that is putting the most number of folks in the hospital and taking their lives.
The Child Labor Act, now before Congress, would raise penalties for companies who violate underage labor laws and let kids injured in the workplace sue. Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro says her bill is necessary because the labor shortage has industries employing more children.
This is in response to industry to have more workers, more than likely who are underpaid, and that they can get cheap labor for doing the jobs that they are doing and taking risks with children.
10 states have looked at rolling back child labor protections in the last 2 years, and federal child labor violations have nearly doubled over the last 4 years. The death of Henry Kissinger is provoking sharp disagreement over his legacy. The former Secretary of State was known for using covert military force in the developing world during the Cold War, but also for opening relations with China. He'll be buried in a private ceremony followed by a public memorial in New York. I'm Alex Gonzalez.
On the Flathead Reservation in northwest Montana, a local county's withdrawal from felony law enforcement has left a tangled mess. Lake County has withdrawn from their obligation, and it's not known whether the state will pick up the slack. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lake County says it will no longer handle felony cases for tribal members on Northwest Montana's Flathead Reservation come next spring. But as Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports, there are many open questions about whether the state will fill that void.
The agreement known as Public Law 280 gives Lake County authority to charge and prosecute tribal members for felony crimes. But the county says it's withdrawing because the state isn't paying for that work. That means the Lake County Jail and Attorney's Office will no longer handle cases involving tribal members. Under the agreement, the state is supposed to take over that responsibility, but Lake County Commission Chair Gail Decker says Governor Gianforte's office has met the county with silence.
I think the governor's office has been aware that this has been a distinct possibility for several months, but no, we have not heard anything.
Gianforte has 6 months to officially recognize Lake County's decision. Gianforte's office declined to answer MTPR's questions about whether the governor will do so and whether the state plans to take over felony jurisdiction for tribal members. During a public meeting, law enforcement agencies on the reservation told residents they won't see much of a change on the ground when the county withdraws. Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes Police Chief Craig Couture.
So if you have a 911 call, any kind of emergency that happens, everyone in this room will be responding. If they're close enough to get there, the others will stay out and handle any calls around just like we always do.
Couture says the tribal jail and prosecutor's office do have the authority and ability to handle felony cases involving tribal members if need be. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Secretary of the Interior Deb Holland says her agency is continuing work on missing and murdered Indigenous people issues. We're taking a look at some of her priorities ahead of next week's White House Tribal Leaders Summit, which she'll chair. Holland says the Interior Department is reviewing recommendations recently released by an advisory commission, which was created to address MMIP and human trafficking.
Missing and murdered Indigenous peoples is it's an issue that has been present here since colonization started on this continent. It's going to take more than a few pieces of legislation to remedy these horrible events. And so we're going to keep working on it.
Holland says a missing and murdered unit created in 2021 has increased investigations across the country, which she says is devoting time and funding to help solve cases and help families heal. Holland talked about work on MMIP during a recent interview with New Mexico PBS. The National Congress of American Indians, the Native American Rights Fund, and the National Native American Bar Association are celebrating the confirmation of Judge Shanlin Park to the U.S. District Court for the District of Hawaii. Park is the first Native Hawaiian woman federal judge in the state. Native Hawaiians make up nearly 22% of the population served by her district. Leaders of the Native group say despite the impact federal court decisions have on Native communities, Native people are underrepresented, with only 7 federal judges currently serving across the country are from American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian communities. The organizations are praising the appointment, saying Park has deep ties to her community and understands how federal laws and policies impact Native Hawaiian, American Indian, and Alaska Native people. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As you heard briefly in 2023 Talks, child labor violations have increased in recent years as states roll back those protections. A bill in Congress would pose stricter penalties for companies violating child labor laws. Edwin J. Vieira has those details.
A bill in Congress with a Connecticut House sponsor aims to reduce child labor in the United States. Called the Children Harmed in Life-Threatening or Dangerous Labor Act, its aim is to strengthen current child labor laws and increase civil penalties for companies that violate them. But this bill puts a new wrinkle on protections. It allows the Secretary of Labor to label goods produced with child labor and to issue a stop work order for any person violating child labor laws. Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro, the bill's House sponsor, describes its importance.
This is in response to industry to have more workers, more than likely who are underpaid, and that they can get cheap labor for doing the jobs that they are doing and taking risks with children. There is a labor shortage, so they're looking to children.
The Economic Policy Institute finds 10 states introduced or passed bills rolling back child labor protections in the last 2 years, and the Labor Department's Wage and Hour Division concluded almost 1,000 investigations that found child labor violations. That's an 88% increase since 2019. The bill has been introduced in both chambers of Congress. Ultimately, the goal is to have stiffer penalties in place for companies that ignore child labor laws. DeLauro says backers of the bill expect some opposition, most likely from states that are rolling back protections and industries that use underage workers.
We got a very strong meatpacking industry. I mentioned Tyson, JBS, Turkey Valley Farms, and Packers Sanitation Services provides cleaning services at these meat processing facilities. I'm going to anticipate that we're going to see industry come out of the woodwork in opposition.
Some companies are already being held accountable with civil penalties. A meatpacking plant owned by Tennessee-based Monogram Meat Snacks was fined a little more than $140,000 for employing children. However, the company made more than $1 billion in 2021. This is Edwin J. Vieira for Connecticut News Service.
A new report looks at challenges on the path from higher ed to landing a job. One expert is calling for a collaborative approach to ensure involved parties are better equipped to prepare lifelong learners. Alex Gonzalez has more in Utah.
A new report from WGU Labs, a nonprofit affiliate of Western Governors University based in Mill Creek, Utah, is shedding light on the importance of strengthening higher education and workforce pathways. Omid Futui, Director of Learning Innovation at WGU Labs, says many people who are considering higher education are asking themselves whether a four-year degree is a worthwhile investment to increase their chances of a prosperous career. 50% of those who do graduate from college didn't apply to entry-level jobs because they felt underqualified, according to Cengage. Futui says that has led to institutions feeling mounting pressure to demonstrate the value in higher ed.
There are long-standing legacies and practices that have shaped the way that higher ed institutions operate, which means that they have their own curriculum, they have their own majors, and they have their own programs that are almost independent of what the workforce needs are requiring.
Futui says workforce needs are both distinct and changing at a rapid pace. The report highlights that while employers continue to primarily hire workers with college degrees, they've expressed more willingness to accept other credentials and demonstration of skills in place of a degree. Futui says institutions can better cater to local job markets by developing tailored skills and rethink conventional models of advising and internships to better serve both parties. Futui argues there are what he calls disjointed, separate levels of incentives that he contends create silos between higher ed and the workforce. Futui says it's clear the current system is broken and gaps need to be filled. WGU Labs convened stakeholders earlier this year to further explore barriers impeding the pathways from graduation to landing a job. Futui adds the solution won't be a single-pronged approach, but rather should be a collaborative effort.
Bring folks to the table so we can have a collective understanding of where the pain points are. And second, let's recognize individuals for what they are, which is lifelong learners aiming to improve the chances at creating a better life for themselves through the opportunities that the workforce stands to offer.
The report says WGU Labs is exploring pilot projects that are based on stakeholder insights as the search for tangible solutions to solve the challenges between higher ed and the workforce persist. For Utah News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Today, December 1st, is the 35th anniversary of World AIDS Day. It's a time to honor those who have worked to find a cure and to remember the more than 40 million people who have died from the disease. Jeannie White Gunder's son, Ryan, became the public face of AIDS in the 1980s as he fought the disease, discrimination, and his right to attend school in Indiana. Joe Ullery has more.
As World AIDS Day turns 35, the mother of an Indiana teen who became the public face of the disease is a reminder of the importance of never forgetting the hard work of medical researchers and the victims lost in the frenzy to find a cure. More than 40 million people have died from AIDS, including Ryan White, who grew up in central Indiana at a time when not much was known about it and medicine offered few treatments. Ryan contracted the disease during a blood transfusion at age 13. He became a staunch advocate against discrimination and helped change how Americans view AIDS. Jeannie White Gunder, who eventually left Indiana for Florida, says it's imperative to remember all the lost lives.
That is so important that we remember all the people who got us to where we are today.
because they are no longer here. And I'm not just talking about Ryan, because Ryan was a face, but there are so many people that did all the work.
Just 5 weeks after Ryan's death in 1990, Congress overwhelmingly passed the Ryan White Care Act with bipartisan support. The legislation helps more people get tested for HIV and offers assistance to patients in all stages of the disease. Ryan's mom says AIDS affects people across the spectrum regardless of labels.
A gay person has it, a straight person has it, a blood transfusion person has it. It was for everybody. Once you have AIDS, you're just like everybody else who has AIDS. You're fighting to stay alive. And people fought to stay alive, and people dedicated their lives to get us to where we are today.
She says Ryan would have turned 52 next week. His mom plans to travel to Indiana University on his birthday, where the Rural Center for AIDS STD Prevention will present the Ryan White Distinguished Leadership Award to Dr. Joe and Sarah Ellen Mamlin. I'm Joe Ullery, Indiana News Service.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KABU Evening News for Friday, December 1st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Michelle Coppola. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegedoff, Joe Ullery, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KABU programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great folks like you. KABU is currently in our end-of-year campaign, so now is a terrific time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, please go to kabu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin and have a great night.